From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
Welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, Carrie Newcomer's new projects, Rob Dixon's small studio session, and the cabaret is getting a permanent home. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of this and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today IUPUI turns out museum leaders who end up throughout the country and will learn about their program. But first up, whether you're a Cirque du Soleil enthusiast, a David Bowie fan, or a follower of modern dance, you'll find something you'll want to see at Butler University this year. I invited Butler Arts Center Executive Director Ty Sutton and Community Relations Manager James Kramer to give us a preview of the first half of their season. The tribute to David Bowie is done by...
Sure. Seu Jorge is his name, and a Brazilian artist who really rose to fame as a result of appearing in The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, which is a Wes Anderson film. If you follow that gang of, you know, Bill Murray and all the others that are always doing Wes's films, he appeared as a character. And this was prior to David Bowie passing. You know, he sort of reimagined all this Bowie music into this sort of lilting acoustic, sung in Portuguese, all of it, and sort of this reinterpretation. So really sort of fascinating. It's created a huge, huge following here in the States and worldwide. So really, really fun and different. And David Bowie, actually, there's a quote by him. I can't remember exactly, but he said it was the most beautiful version of his music he'd ever heard.
Oh, wow.
So
from the man himself.
From the
That's
man himself,
cool.
Yeah. So big endorsement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really excited about that show.
Speaking of cover artists, let's talk about Joan Osborne and Dylan.
Yeah. So really fun. I was in New York in January, and Joan Osborne was doing this project where she had decided she wanted to really concentrate on just doing Dylan. Now, not just songs that Dylan had made famous by singing, but songs he had written for other people.
Ah.
So it's a really, you know, sort of wide range in his catalog. And so I saw the show, and it's phenomenal. It was at Joe's Pub at the National, and totally sold out, and people really... just really well done. And Joan is a very talented singer, so she can really pull it off.
What the heck, James, is Flip Fabrique?
Flip Fabrique. Well, yeah, it's a Cirque show. So there's a lot of acrobatics and a lot of death-defying, gravity-defying acts, really, is I think the kind of short way of expressing that.
And that's going to be included. Do you have to make
yes.
any adjustments to the space for this, or... or is it all of the mechanical stuff is brought in by the company?
Yeah, you know, and that's true with most of the things. They do bring in all the equipment they need. You know, we're there as a support to get all of that safely rigged and you know, make it as exciting a show. Because there are times if you see the website and see clips of what they're doing, they're basically diving off of a two-story platform onto a trampoline and then back up onto the wall.
That makes me nervous to hear you talk
just,
about.
I think it's a little maybe parkour, a little Cirque. It's, you know, it's a nice mix of things that I think just people are going to find very entertaining if they like movement and they like to come out and see people do some more maybe edgy, exciting sorts of things. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And
to
all
see
to
that.
Music, all choreographed music.
Yes, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. So I think it's going to be a really fun show.
I love this because normally you have to go to Las Vegas to see a big Cirque show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this, you know, I think has a wonderful sort of urban feel about it in the look that they are, you know, sporting and the settings that they're in.
I can't imagine the Simon and Garfunkel story. This is a special anniversary, right?
So what this show is, you know, so many people are such fans of Simon and Garfunkel, yeah. and they're not going to perform together in the future. So what this is this is really sort of a retrospective of their career, and it started out as a musical in the West End in London. And so similar to a show that was inspired by the Beatles called Rain, which has been popular for a long time.
Okay.
And so it's sort of the same idea of how do we showcase this great music with great, you know, live musicians sort of reinterpreting it, but also use video to give the real story. And so it started out as a small musical in West End, and it just grew and grew, and the audience grew and grew, to the point they toured it through the UK, and the entire tour sold out. And, I mean, they did probably every major market in the United Kingdom. And so it's just incredibly popular. So this is the first time they're bringing it to the States.
No way. Congratulations.
I have several friends that have seen it, and the feedback is spectacular. Certain theaters have gone on sale with this show, and it's sold out. So we anticipate the interest has been very, very strong. Mm-hmm. We haven't done any advertising, and you know, people are finding us. So the interest, you know, in Simon and Garfunkel's story is really strong. So we're excited about it, and it's very well done with the video and the live band and the music.
And as with the Beatles, it's an act that has transcended, what, 3, 4, maybe even 5 generations now.
Absolutely. I mean, still. And I think the inspiration of the way they crafted their music has really inspired other songwriters as well.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's not a Butler Arts Presents season without one or two fantastic dance companies. I'm looking
yes.
at my dancer
yes.
in the room, James.
Yes, yes. Well, Giordano Dance Chicago, founded by Gus Giordano, one of the founders of and developers of jazz dance technique as we know it. It's now being run by his daughter, Nan. And in addition to having that performance on stage, which is just going to be, a wonderful evening of strong, trained jazz movement and dance and music, we're doing some outreach with that as well. That's one of our things. We'll be reaching to our Butler students, of course. They'll have a master class with the artistic director of the company.
Wow.
Which I think is, you know, a wonderful way to introduce them to the real-world experience of. As well as we're going to be reaching down to Greensburg to work with some students there and bringing first graders the art of jazz dance.
Aww.
And then here locally with Kids Dance Outreach, we'll be working with them. And so they also get to have that experience with the artistic director. So I think that's going to be some really meaningful outreach that we're going to have right here in our community.
Great partnerships.
So, yes.
Absolutely. And then kind of leading into November and December, what wonderful shows to celebrate the holidays. I know November 8th is a little early to be thinking of the King's Singers' 50th anniversary as a Thanksgiving event, but I'm thinking that sounds like a great family outing for Thanksgiving. For anybody who's been under a rock, doesn't know who the King's Singers are.
Oh, sure. Well, King's Singers, probably one of the best known, you know, male vocal groups in the world. I think they probably were pioneers for a lot of others that have come later. But really, this is a retrospective performance, which showcases some of the best of in terms of the program. And we've been working on the program for a while now, and it will reach all the way back to, you know, some of their Baroque. And also you'll see some pop and some of the songs that they've taken and turned into modern classics by putting their special spin on it. So they've been at Clues in the past. It's been quite a while. So we're really excited to have them back.
And then Charlie Brown's invading.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Charlie Brown should be really fun. It's a it's a show intended for the younger kids, and so it's a shorter show, you know, appropriate for them. Comes in at just about an hour, which is important for people to know, but really that's the attention span. So it's really focused on that, being incredibly family friendly, and is doing a very long tour. We're really excited to have it right in the heart of, you know, it's Charlie Brown Christmas live on stage, so to have it right in the heart of that season is really exciting for us as well.
And then for maybe a little bit more mature audience, I feel as though it's a card game. I see you three tenors, and I'm raising the bid to 10 tenors. These are Australian tenors. Tell us about the 10 tenors.
So the 10 tenors, they're exactly that. They're Australian. You know, there's several tenors groups, and they all have their own identity, I would say.
Yeah.
The 10 tenors, they're very macho. They're very, you know, they're very Australian. They're very have a large presence with 10, you know, with 10 voices at a time. They really have a big sound. And, you know, they haven't focused on coming to the United States as much as some of the others have. They really, they're huge in Asia and Europe.
Oh.
And on the West Coast of the United States, they've come and done residency where, in Palm Springs at the Performing Arts Center, they'll sell out 10 nights in a row. They're that well known in some of these markets, but they have really not toured the Midwest. So I've worked with them before. It's really fun. They do everything from, you know, a classical sound to very sort of, you know, pop interpretation, but really with their training as the root of it. And so it should be a lot of fun. And it's a really great holiday show, sort of celebrating, you know, the pop side of holiday music and some of the classical and sort of traditional side. So really fun show for the family.
Butler Arts Center Executive Director Ty Sutton and Community Relations Manager James Kramer. The Butler Arts Center comprises Clues Memorial Hall, the Schrott Center for the Arts, Ideson Duckwall Recital Hall, and Lily Hall Studio Theater. You can find out more about the entire Butler Arts Center season at butlerartscenter.org. He's known as the mayor of the Indianapolis jazz scene, but Rob Dixon also has a stellar reputation across the country and beyond as an accomplished musician, composer, and educator. Jill Dittmeyer caught up with Rob and his band Triology as part of our August small studio session, Performers.
Rob Dixon grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and started his music career in the fourth grade.
I really wanted to play the drums, but everybody wanted to play the drums in my bands. So I had to pick another instrument, and saxophone was it. It was kind of funny because I still wanted to play the drums. So I talked to my parents about playing drums, and they said, well, do well with saxophone. And that gave me some, like, really inspiration, like, some incentive to, like, really work at saxophone. So the more I worked at saxophone, the more I realized, man, I really like this, you know?
So much so that by the time he was a sophomore in college, he changed his major to music and moved to Indiana to study under Dr. David Baker at the IU Jacobs School of Music.
And then I was like, well, I can always do something else, but nothing else came up. So, you know what I mean? You're like, yeah, I can always do that. I can always do, I'm gonna do music for right now. And it's like, you know, 25 years later, I'm like, well, I guess I can always do something else, but I'm going to keep doing music for a while. So that's kind of the way I've rationalized that in my mind.
Performance is an important part of his career, as are teaching and promoting jazz.
Indianapolis Jazz Foundation, it was an organization that puts together Indie Jazz Fest, as well as other events that happen involving jazz around the city of Indianapolis. And about six years ago, I started a youth combo, and call it the Jazz Futures. And pulled from high school students all around the Indiana area, of high school students that had really a really strong interest in playing jazz. My goal was to not only get them to rehearse on a regular basis, but to also perform on a regular basis.
Dixon is also an advocate of the Indianapolis sound.
I associate with a few different sounds, and one is the sound of that comes from Wes Montgomery and J.J. Johnson. There's a way of playing the music, particularly straight-ahead jazz. And then there's that funk and blues, too, with Funk Incorporated. I mean, there's so many things that, like, happened with the funk bands that came out of the 70s that nobody knows that Indianapolis has such a strong funk and R&B influence across the world. So I think there's that.
Dixon senses a return to instrumental jazz as the next big thing in the local jazz scene.
A lot of times when people listen to music, I think, you know, a part of what they're really attracted to is maybe the harmony and maybe the groove of how the music moves, the beat and the harmonic structure. A lot of people say, well, I identify with the words, but then they hear a song and they're like, well, I like the beat, you know.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
You can find Rob Dixon's entire small studio session at WFYI.org, and Small Studio is made possible by a grant from the Herbert Simon Family Foundation and with support from Neato Art Shop and Sun King Brewery. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Just around the corner, singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer tells Jill Dittmeyer all about several new projects. But first, Eat Drink Indie's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with old Major Market's Mark LaFay. He took honors as barbecue grand champion at the Indiana State Fair, and he's also become known as the Bacon Guy.
Well, we are here talking with Mark LaFay of Old Major Market and the winner of the 2017 Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off at the Indiana State Fair. So thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's fun to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of how this all started. You've kind of become the Bacon Guy.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in how you go from a tech background, a music background, and become something different.
Sure.
So tell me about how this all started.
I mean, basically, the transition was just in, you know, the winding down of a technology startup I'd been working on. And, you know, I just was interested in kind of changing pace. That combined with all of our passions, I was like, well, it's not going to get any easier to do this when I get older. So, you know, if I'm going to try to do this, then let's try to do it now. That's how, you know, we started down the path of, you know, of the market. So the way that we actually got started on that, though, you know, once we said, okay, well, let's just see how this works. So how does it work? Because I don't know a lot.
Right.
When I got started, I didn't know a lot about food retail. You know, all the different things that go into that. You know, you're talking about perishable products. You're talking about, you know, health code. You're talking about, you know, just all kinds of regulation. And I mean, there's just a lot of pieces and parts that go into that.
I mean, were you making this for yourself and for friends before it became a market? Were you doing bacon in the backyard?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, the barbecue thing was basically the segue. So when I decided to start this, it wasn't like, all right, I'm going to go buy the charcuterie book and learn how to hot smoke bacon.
Right. So it didn't start there. Right.
But that, I mean, that was definitely a step in the process, you know. But
so you were interested in all of this. You know, you mentioned the backyard gardening, the hunting, the slow food, the yep. cooking at home. It all kind of has come together.
But yeah, exactly. When we started to, you know, say, how do we start this process? I said, well, why don't I just pick a product that everybody loves, and let's just do it as best as we can, and let's see if our neighbors like it.
Okay.
And it literally was as simple as that. And so I was like, well, everybody loves bacon. So yeah, we started with that. And
so you just started making bacon.
Yeah, I mean, I sent out a text message to about 15 neighbors and said, hey, I'm making some bacon. Would you like some? This is how much I'll sell it to you for. And so they're like, yeah, sure. And so,
so you got a good response right off?
Right off the bat, everybody was like, this is the best bacon I've ever had. So I said, okay, well, then if I can do this once, can I do it twice? And
consistency, right?
Well, it's consistency, but also just, you know, if they really do like it, will they buy it again? You know,
Is
this just a... Oh, this is nice.
Mark's I'm being nice this. To my neighbor. Yeah, yeah. I'll buy some bacon. Sure.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Girl Scout cookies, you know?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, I guess. I don't need them, but I'll take them.
But it wasn't like that, right?
Right. So it kind of started to grow. So then, you know, there are some other people who are like, hey, I heard you're making really good bacon. Can I get on your list? And so there was, you know, that's kind of how it started to go. And then, you know, I decided to cast a little bit wider net before I got to, you know, crazy about it, though. I was just like, I need to figure out how to do this legit.
Sure. So that's Old Major Market, right? So that's the concept. You're creating this and selling it online right now.
Correct.
What are the products that you have?
Well, I think we've got about 40 different products now, maybe 50. Again, with the seasonality of things, you know, there's certain products that, you know, I think go better in different parts of the year.
Is there a seasonality for bacon? Is there a bacon season?
It's 364 days out of the year.
There you go.
One day so that you don't have to tell your doctor that you eat it every day of the year.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point.
Will you be my refuge? My haven in the storm.
Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on.
Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, after a decade of being hosted by other organizations' venues, the cabaret is getting its very own space. But right now, singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer is celebrating the release of her latest album with a live show at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington on September 16th. The music is from another live performance that also became an Indiana Public Broadcasting TV special, and WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer is here to tell us more.
Last November, Carrie released her latest CD, which is called The Beautiful Not Yet. And in addition to touring that CD, she made a stop in Bloomington at the Buskirk Chumley to do a live concert that included music and musicians, both old and new. And that memorable night became a TV show and now a companion CD called Carrie Newcomer and Friends.
It was such an amazing experience. It's always a wonderful thing to release a new album. There's so much excitement about the new work, and this one felt special. It felt really special in a lot of different ways. And then to release it at in my own hometown, I love the Buskirk Chumley Theater. It's one of those old vaudeville theaters that the community has saved and brought back, and it's just a community treasure, an intimate space. Even though there's a lot of people, everything feels very intimate. And then it was, you know, this wonderful, you know, Indiana hometown listeners. You know, it's like such a warm, the spirit of the night was just so beautiful. And, you know, I should say top thing is, you know, I got to work with these incredible musicians. All of them were just virtuosos in their own right, and many of them have their own solo careers in their own right, and then to work with WFYI on top of it, who was doing this beautiful filming, and everyone was so excited and professional, and it was really a pretty glorious experience.
Well, and it turned out beautifully. Visually, the program is wonderful, and it's been airing on the different PBS, IPBS stations around the state. And now, the big CD release. So it's kind of like you get to relive it all over again, don't you?
It is interesting, you know, the way it worked out, that the release of this live album would happen at the same theater, you know. So there's something that feels a little doppelganger about it.
But, in a good way.
But at the same time, it will be a different configuration of musicians. We will be doing many of the songs that are on the live album, but we'll also be doing some new songs and some other songs that have become good friends. So there'll be overlap in the program, but a lot of new stuff and other things that are from past releases. So
was it hard to get all those musicians together the night that you recorded that concert, or did you say, we're doing it this night, and they were all like, yeah, I want to be there?
Like I said, many people were coming from other parts of the country, and it was a little bit of an organizational thing to make sure that everybody could work it into their own touring schedules and could be there. We did one performance before the Buskirk show, so we kind of had a running start into the one at the Buskirk, and also folks came in even a day earlier than that, so we could spend time together and play the songs and work on them a bit together. Many of the people on the show were people who recorded The Beautiful Not Yet in the studio, so we're very familiar with the songs, but it was really nice to spend a little time together and just at my house in a really relaxed setting.
And the night of the album release party, what do you want your fans to come away with besides a copy of the CD? What do you want them to take with them after sharing this another rich musical experience with you?
One of the reasons why I went ahead to release this live album, you know, I've had a lot of performances recorded, but there was a certain spirit in the room. There was a real synergy that happened between the musicians and a spirit that happened between us and the audience. And I think know, I think that's really possible with music. I think that's one of the things that makes live music different than recorded music. I think this recording actually captured some of that as much as a recording can. But at the same time, you know, the show in September will be live, and something happens when people are sitting side by side and musicians are there and the music is literally in the air. There is something about live performance that you can't get any other way.
Tickets to that reserve seating show on the 16th are going very fast. You can also purchase a CD and a DVD of the IPBS TV show that night at the concert as well. Her website is carrienewcomer.com. That will link you to the ticket sale site. And then I asked Carrie what was next. She's always working on something. And she is working with Quaker author Parker J. Palmer and Indianapolis pianist Gary Walters, who she works with a lot. They're creating a spoken word and music project. It's called What We Need Is Here, Hope, Hard Times, and the Human Possibility. And they're going to be presenting it on Friday, October the 6th at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Indianapolis. And you can get more information on that show on her website as well, carrienewcomer.com.
Well, that's a lot of music to take in. And we have some music and some other things that people can check out on our calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
Here's something completely different. Shakespeare's fun Much Ado About Nothing is being produced by the Improbable Fiction Theater Company. Their venue is the Cat Theater, a relatively new space in Carmel. And performances are winding up this weekend, this Saturday night at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 2.
It's time for First Friday once again. We're looking at September First Fridays and at the Full Circle 9 Gallery in the Circle City Industrial Complex in downtown Indianapolis. Artist Robin Toulouse will be featuring her work. It's called Vignettes. That is her show. And she makes these beautiful images and collages with found objects that are usually very personal to her. But this time she's doing something a little different. She's focusing on Victorian memorial photography, classical music, and artists and writers who are significant to her. So take a look at her work from 6 to 9 p.m. in the Full Circle 9 Gallery there in the South Studios down there in the Circle City Industrial Complex right off of Mass Avenue and 10th Street downtown.
Don't forget that the Indie Fringe Festival is still going on at venues on and around Mass Ave, and there's just everything from wild comedy to very personal and poignant storytelling, dance, music, and so very much more. IndieFringe.org is your first stop to organize your trip.
Another exciting First Friday show coming up on the beginning of September is at the Long Sharp Gallery. They are located in the Conrad Hotel just off of Monument Circle downtown. And they are going to be showing some of the work of limestone sculptor Dale Enochs. And this is going to be interesting how they're going to show some of his work in their studio. Photography will be part of it, but he's actually going to have some of his installations there too. He has created numerous life-size sculptures all across the state and in other parts of the country as well. He will be there to talk about his work, and we are actually going to be with him on our Facebook Live page the night before that First Friday. So here's another great way to spend your First Friday in September down there at Long Sharp Gallery. That exhibit also runs from 6 to 9 p.m.
The Center for the Performing Arts up in Carmel has just started its single ticket sales. You can still get subscriptions if you're of a mind to, but you can also get single tickets for acts like Michael McDonald with Mark Cohn, Jim Brickman, Celtic Thunder, Canadian Brass, and many, many more. You can find out more at thecenterpresents.org about all that.
The faculty exhibition is underway at Marion University in Marion Hall on their second floor gallery. You will get to see a mixed array of work by some of the faculty there, including Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer Bill Foley has his photography on the wall. They're going to have a reception on September the 14th from 4 to 6 p.m., but the gallery is open now every day. Just go to their EDU website to find out and take a look at the good work from the faculty folks there at Marion University.
Gosh, we've got so many more things to tell you about, but we are out of time. Don't forget that you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, or tune in for our calendar next week that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Professional museum administrators who studied at IUPUI have ended up across the country and beyond, and we'll learn about the university's respected program in just a few minutes. But first, the Cabaret at the Columbia Club, the Cabaret at Indiana Landmarks Center. What if we could just say the cabaret? Shannon Forsell, the organization's artistic director and CEO, is determined that very, very soon the cabaret will have a home of its very own. You've been itinerant, the cabaret, for a while, which doesn't mean you haven't had a home. It just means you haven't had a home of your own.
Yes, we've had many homes.
You've had many homes. And you're in the works of having a permanent home.
Right. It's pretty amazing. We didn't expect to do this so soon, but it's our 10-year anniversary next year.
Hey, congratulations.
Which is, yeah.
So wait, what's the appropriate gift? Oh, I guess a new home is
right,
the appropriate 10-year anniversary gift.
We've got on our website lots of other things you can give as the appropriate gift for this as well. But
she just slipped on her fundraiser hat. Good girl.
Exactly. So sometimes things happen in the way they're supposed to happen, not in the way you think they're going to happen, timing-wise. Yeah. Worlds have come together and that have created this partnership that really seemed like a great fit, and it was at a good time. And so we're moving forward with these exciting plans. But luckily, we have a fantastic home at Indiana Landmarks, who's been absolutely amazing, an amazing home for us. And frankly, we would stay there forever, but they need Saturday nights and we need Saturday nights. So that has been an amazing interim space for us, and we're super grateful to that. And then now we're working on a long-term situation in partnership with Buckingham Companies and the Arts Council of Indianapolis at 9th and Pennsylvania. It was one of those where we were looking at the Alexander when we were looking at spaces, because it's helpful for us to be near a hotel.
Sure.
Not only for our artists, but for lots of folks that want to stay overnight after a show or come. That we do have a lot of folks that come from out of town, oddly, and in a great way.
Not oddly. You bring some talent that you can't get anyplace else.
Right. You know, these folks aren't coming to the Midwest, so a lot of folks, it is the chance to see them. And so we had looked at the Alexander to be near food, hotel, all those kinds of things that we had when we were at the Columbia Club. And, you know, they said, we don't really have a great fit for you, but we have this other idea. And that's when this location at 9th and Pennsylvania came about, which was at one time Roller Land.
Yeah, it's been a lot of things. I don't remember. I think it stopped being Roller Land.
1979,
decades.
I think it was. Yeah, and it's been
Supper. It was Jimmy's Supper Club for a while. It was a club called Utopia for a while. The Arts Council's in there with its gallery.
Right. And I didn't even really know about this space, and I'm from Indianapolis, so it was. No one really knows that building goes as far back as it does.
Yeah,
And it's hard to find a space that doesn't have columns. You know, things you don't think about when you're looking for space.
And that's important because of sightlines.
Sightlines, right? So this is going to open up a different world for us, a world where we're more than just presenting shows, and now we can be community partners, and hopefully be a space for others that need perform that were like us, that were very nomadic, or are nomadic, and need a space not every day, but need a space sometimes. And we're still not going to be an every weekend cabaret, so we'll have some open nights for those kinds of things.
So you'll be able to rent out to others who need space.
And provide those. And so being a community partner is really exciting to us. That's a new thing for us.
Yeah. Talk about acoustics.
Well, that's also the exciting thing for us. This will be the first space we've been in that is actually created acoustically for us, for cabaret.
Okay.
So we've been working with some fantastic sound acousticians and, of course, with Ratio Architects on the space. And so there's lots of folks weighing in and creating what we hope will be a fantastic sound experience. We've been blessed that we've had great sound in all these places anyway, because we have a great sound guy. But this space will be designed so that it's for sound and lights, for specifically for cabaret, which is new for us.
Seating capacity, ballpark?
Ballpark around 175, very similar to what we are at Indiana Landmarks. Mm-hmm. We were at 150 at the Columbia Club. So we have been practicing at growing with our time at Indiana Landmarks. So it'll be a very similar in size. And that's been great because we've been able to grow our audience at a steady pace because 150 was too small. And we either needed to do more shows or have a bigger place. Having a bigger place isn't great because then it's not cabaret.
Sure.
Because intimacy is what makes it cabaret. So similar size to that.
It strikes me that your high-profile people who come in, they're not coming in to rehearse. They do a sound check before the show, and mm-hmm. then they do the show.
Mm-hmm.
But you have other programming that having your own space will allow your educational programs
right.
to have dedicated space so you're not having to lease space or borrow space and have limited time.
Right. It was very difficult for us to run educational programming without a space because exactly what you said, rehearsals, things that don't generate revenue but still create a cost if you have to rent that room to do it. So we had limited local programming of local artists. And over the 10 years of building a love for cabaret, we've also built a love for artists to become cabaret artists. And so we're excited that we're now going to be able to serve that need.
Shannon Forsell is Artistic Director and CEO of The Cabaret. Learn all about their new home at thecabaret.org. Did you know that Indianapolis is home to a university program that helps develop some of our nation's museum leaders? Contributor Pete Brown sat down with the head of the program and a former student of the program to check in on this unique opportunity for students interested in having a career in the arts and culture sector.
Liz, since you've been with the Museum Studies program at IUPUI for quite a while, can you give me a little bit of insight into the history of that program, how it started and why it started maybe?
Sure, absolutely. It was started actually back in 1992 by a group of faculty from anthropology, history, art history, education, who wanted to meet the needs of students who were interested in those fields, but wanted to apply that kind of disciplinary-based knowledge in the museum field. So they put together an undergraduate certificate. And then I came in 1999 with the goal of really growing that program. It had about 12 students in an undergraduate certificate program. And because of the vision of some of IUPUI's leaders at the time, like Bill Plater, they saw the opportunity as an urban university to develop a much more robust graduate program that would be very much conceived in partnership with community museums. Kind of, we don't have a university museum, which is one model, but instead we have these incredible cultural institutions. So we developed an interdisciplinary museum studies program. So people who combine those different approaches to visual culture or history or anthropology. And it's very much centered around civic engagement, around working with community in terms of the museum partners, and also training our students to conceptualize their work as very much part of the community. That when they go out into the museum field, how do those museums serve their communities? How do they tackle relevant issues? So we're really interested in all that museums do in terms of collect and preserve and interpret, but particularly museums not so much as treasure houses, but as community forums.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's been a lot of interesting writings recently about the role of museums in modern culture and that they have a certain responsibility to address things that are happening right now. Is that at all discussed during the program?
Absolutely. When I came back in 1999, I was the only faculty member. And we now have six positions, and they are all public scholars of civic engagement. And each person holds a particular role within that. We have public scholars of museums, families, and learning, public scholar of community curation, Native American representation. But the idea is each of these faculty members engages students through their teaching and research and in partnership with community museums in these issues. So Larry Zimmerman, my colleague who's worked with the Idlejork Museum and does Native American representation, has looked at issues of stereotyping and representations of Native Americans in film and, as you know, in comic books and in other formats. My colleague Laura Holtzman, who works with visual culture, has been engaged with a group in the Near East Side looking at public art as a form of community empowerment and really building on the resources in those communities, those assets, and using those to mobilize them towards community development and growth. So each of these faculty very much is dedicated to training students to go out and do museum work, the best practices and the techniques, but for this purpose of making our communities better.
And Aaron, as a former student, you know, coming from Michigan and getting your bachelor's up in Michigan, then to transition into the Museum Studies program at IUPUI, what attracted you to that program in the first place, and what were some of your expectations as you were getting involved?
Before coming to the program, I taught high school for a few years, and so I had the experience of what formal education could do for people, and I wanted more out of that, so I went into a science museum and did science education for a few more years, a few additional years, and that's where I got hooked on the idea that learning can happen outside of a classroom in varied ways, and to me a museum is a great forum for that to occur. So life circumstances brought me to Indiana, and I was just searching for something else, something more, and I found the IUPUI program, and what really drew me to that program in particular was the aspect of multidisciplinary. I used to be a Latin teacher, and what I enjoyed about that was history and language and art,
sure,
and culture. And, you know, so I've always been drawn to connecting all the pieces and bringing them together to create a broader picture,
yeah,
of the world and of life. And I feel like the IUPUI Museum Studies program takes bits and pieces from all over to create a broader picture of what museums can be and should be.
Well, and now you've got your own business, and you're working with cultural organizations around Central Indiana and kind of anybody, anywhere else, really. How do you feel like that has translated to Genius Fish and, you know, experience you need to go out on your own and create a company?
I think what it really did was made me comfortable understanding the different roles. So if I'm entering in as someone who's working with the education department to create a tour, I have enough standing, or I have a certain amount of understanding of what the curators may be interested in, and being able to kind of draw that and kind of draw difference from the departments to inform my work and my my role as a consultant. When I was in a museum prior to the museum studies program, I felt very isolated. I was in the education department, and that's all I knew was the education department and the education department's goals. And if anything worked against the education department, that wasn't okay.
Yeah.
Worked against us. So now I feel like I have a broader view of how all departments are working together to achieve something.
How have both of you seen the cultural landscape in Indianapolis sort of change or grow in the time that you've been here?
I hear about the festivals more often. I hear about the museum events. And whereas I remember when I first came to this city, I would ask somebody, what is there to do here? What should we do? And people who had been here for their entire lives didn't really answer that question for me. And now I feel like I can bring up an event that's coming up, and the people who are around me also know about that event, and they can talk about it, or can then say, oh, but did you do this? Have you gone to this? So
yeah,
there's definitely more of a conversation bubbling.
I would see absolutely that kind of diversification of the arts scene. You know, there's been Penrod forever and the Broad Ripple Art Fair and Talbot Street and things like that that are certainly kind of anchor experiences, but just all the different kind of pop-up exhibits and the things happening all along not just Mass Ave, but Fountain Square, and, you know, that kind of mobilization of contemporary art and community and the engagement with all kinds of issues.
Contributor Pete Brown with Liz Kreider Reed from IUPUI and Aaron Hetrick from Genius Fish chatting about the Museum Studies program at IUPUI. You can learn more about the program at iupui.edu, and you can learn more about Genius Fish at geniusfishindy.com. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I'm here with the Indianapolis artist, MC, musician, creative person, Flacco. You can find him all over the internet at Flacco is Bored. That's F-L-A-C-O is Bored. He's getting ready to perform at Trees this Saturday, August 26th in Fountain Square. Flacco, thank you for being here.
No problem, man.
You got five songs to share with us.
I have five bangers to show the world, and it's probably not going to be hip-hop or artists that you know of, so I'm going to try to put you on a little bit.
Well, thank you for doing that. What's your first banger for us?
All right, we got a band called No Cash, okay, and the song Life is a Drag. You're gonna love it. Even if you're not, it's a punk band, you're going to love it. It's extremely catchy, as most punk choruses are. It's an extreme banger, okay? You gotta check it out.
Yeah, oh, life is a drag, deadly like a bug. If sadness lurks within your walls like in mine, where I am confined to my room's a hide.
Number two, okay.
You probably heard of this artist, okay? It's Toro Imoa, okay? He just came out with Boo Boo, okay, new album. There's a song called Mirage, okay, first track. You gotta check it out, okay? Absolute banger, okay? Number three, okay, Choking Victim. You just need to search that in Google, Choking Victim, okay, and download everything, okay? That is the one song. You just download everything, all the projects, okay?
Swollen the dragon is a dig. Tumble square park up by every way. Halfway down the 40 and a pick him up to me. He said, listen here, boy, gotta show me your ID. But living in a police state, I tell ya, man, it ain't that great. I know it doesn't even matter what I say, but don't you know there's gotta be a better way.
Here's a, what is that, three?
Yes.
All right, four. Okay. We're going to do Hoodrich Pablo Juan, okay? We're gonna, for my trappers out there, all my trap artists with the gold chains and the cut-up jeans, okay? Hoodrich Pablo Juan, okay? I Do This. A great song, great for summer. Absolute banger, okay? That's four.
Louis V on. Louis V. I got on V-long. I just bought a new chain, that bit three tone. I'm in designer red bottle spike, look like pine cone. Spike the pineapple, spike double cup styrofoam. I got the AP in the roller, switch your time zone. You can turn off all the lights, I put them diamonds on.
Five, okay, I'm gonna give you, this is the fifth one. Are you listening to this right now? The fifth song, okay? Here's what the song is gonna be, okay? I'm trying to buy time to think of the fifth song. All right, I got it. Okay. All right, we're gonna do King Krule, okay? If you've heard of them, you've probably heard of King Krule, all right? So, again, it's the same thing with Choking Victim. Download his first album, okay? King Krule, all right? When you're listening to that and you're done with it, go back to number one, which was what again? What was that? No Cash, okay? So you're going to go from No Cash all the way back down and all the way back down up. It's your boy Flacco.
Same old Bobby, same old beat. Well, yeah, they got nothing on me. The same old cars, same old streets. But yeah, they got nothing on me. Come and easy go.
And that was the easiest five-song session I ever did. You just came straight out the gate with it. And I love King Cruel, so thanks for playing it.
Yeah, appreciate
it. And, yeah, give folks just a quick sketch of who you are as an artist and remind them where they can check you out online.
Flaco, a.k.a. Flaquito Mijo, a.k.a. my mom really, really thinks I'm handsome, okay? You can find me at Flaco is Bored everywhere, okay? Twitter, Instagram, Facebook Messenger, Zanga, PayPal, Order Up, Google, all of that. Flaco is Bored. So check me out. You can check out all my music at flacoisbored.com or go to my Bandcamp, which has my entire discography. And that is at www.bandcamp.com/Flaco is Bored. And you can find everywhere there. Also, if you like merch, I got merch too. You go to bigcartel.com/what is it? Flaco is Bored. You got it. Great.
Thank you, Flaco.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Pete Brown, Melissa Davis, and Jill Dittmeyer. You can hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or hear us Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, a sneak preview of Actors Theater of Indiana's fall offerings, the Indianapolis Society of the Classical Guitar, and nearly 5,000 visitors celebrate Scottish heritage, music, and food in Columbus, Indiana. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.